This is a production of Cornell University.
Serving as Senior Associate Dean in the College of Arts and Sciences, and I'm co-chairing the committee with Judy Appleman here. So let me just give you a background of what we're here to discuss, the Organizational Structures Report. This is part of a longer-term project, a longer-term review of the social sciences at Cornell that the Provost initiated. Provost actually initiated this review a little more than 2 years ago. Judy and I sort of agreed to sort of co-chair the endeavor. It consisted of a series of steps. The first step was the formation of an internal committee of faculty that put together a descriptive report on the social sciences, essentially described what the social sciences currently look like at Cornell. That report was completed in January 2017. Then that report was provided to an external committee. So this is a group of scholars, distinguished scholars from other universities, that read that report, came to Cornell for a couple days, met with lots of faculty and students, and then they produced an external review of social sciences that we received in April 2017. Both the internal and external report were then made available to the Cornell faculty, and there was a period of collecting feedback last spring and summer. And then based on that feedback in the early fall, sort of August, September, we developed sort of three new committees that we were going to put in place to react to those two reports. Two of those committees have been formed, the third has not. Just very briefly, the third committee, the one that hasn't been formed, will be a committee on administrative structures. Really what that will look at is the first two reports pointed out a variety of things that just kind of annoy people, that sort of make it hard to do stuff in terms of little details of rules that differ across colleges and so on. So that will be coming up, sort of a committee to address that small stuff in terms of, well, small stuff, the stuff that really bothers people in some sense large. The two committees that started meeting this fall were one on organizational structures that Judy and I co-chair, a second on idea panels that were co-chaired by Dan Lichter and Valerie Hahn. The latter, since we're talking about the former, let me just first mention what the latter is. The latter is looking at areas of possible research collaboration in the social sciences. This is part of the Provost's broader initiative on radical collaboration. sort of attempt to sort of have a campus discussion of where we might have radical collaboration in the social sciences, where the provost might invest. So our committee, the Committee on Organizational Structures, was instead tasked with looking at how social sciences, the social science units and centers at Cornell are organized. So just to give a little background of what we did as we looked at this committee, so now turning to the slides, so why look at organizational structures? I have three slides just in terms of why. The first one is something that has been heard a lot. There's actually been a series of external and internal reviews of the social sciences at Cornell, in fact going back to 1965. And a theme that comes up again and again and again is this idea that in the social sciences, the whole is less than the sum of the parts. So just to put some context on that, what we frequently hear is people thinking that all the social sciences need is more investment, in this sort of sense that they're just social sciences are being squeezed, social science departments being undersized. So we hear that again and again and again. At the same time, when we look at aggregate university numbers, so this, in particular we did this in our internal report, at the aggregate level, not looking at how it's divided up, it actually looks like the social sciences have quite a bit of investment. So just a few things we threw up here. So these are fall 2016 numbers. So we sort of put departments in the bin, the social science departments and social science related departments. So the social science departments are the kind of clearly social science departments, social science related, also have social sciences, but other stuff going on as well. Just in that narrow set, it encompasses 27% of tenure track faculty at Cornell. Moreover, over the past 15 years, that small set of departments had grown at a rate of about roughly 15%, whereas Cornell university-wide was growing at a rate of about 5% in terms of tenure track faculty. So it seems like there is a lot of faculty, and yet people feel like there isn't. Similar thing can be said with the social science centers, the feeling of there's a whole bunch of centers that feel small, but when you aggregate them all up, they look large. So this disconnect between this feeling that we need more investment, but then seeing a lot of investment, to us kind of suggests there's an issue with the organizational structures at Cornell. Second sort of type of motivation for why organizational structures is some issues that were brought to our committee from the prior reviews, from some early discussions with departments. I'll just go through these relatively quickly, but these are a few things that were on our mind as we move forward. So one was looking for ways to improve coordination of faculty that are within the same discipline, but exist in different academic units, and to try to get those faculty coordinated more. Second, and closely related, is to improve internal information flow, to make people aware of who else is at Cornell, what are the types of research is going on at Cornell, and what opportunities exist at Cornell. The third is quite important to people on the committee, was recognizing that undergraduates at Cornell are very dispersed, and to do things to reduce the restrictions that are restrictions and options available to them given that dispersion. Fourth is to facilitate more intentional decision making about the allocation of resources across social science units. So Cornell is organized in this very decentralized way where allocation of resources happens through independent units making decisions. And whether there should be more of, in addition to that, sort of looking at sort of the overall allocation. And then finally, looking at issues of reducing duplication or overlap of efforts across social science units. Final thing, just in terms of the issue of why organizational structures, is a little bit just to say the perspective took by our committee. So the prior slide, in some sense, listed problems in some sense to address. But while those were on our mind, we tried not to talk that much about solving problems, but instead tried to look forward in thinking about opportunities. So the language we often used was trying to position Cornell for excellence in 10 to 15 years. So without saying current quality, just saying, well, how could we be better? In particular, various ways in terms of having outstanding research programs, extensive external funding profiles, outstanding educational programs, impressive successes in recruiting and retaining of faculty and students, and diversity in faculty, staff, and student bodies. And as we did all that, keeping in mind the need to be flexible, because the areas of excellence today might not be the focal areas of the future. So we need to have a structure that enables us to constantly be on the leading edge, wherever it may be. So finally, just a few last comments before we open it up for feedback. So if you've read the organizational structures report, you'll see that the report puts 8 ideas on the table for discussion. I want to emphasize that we chose the word ideas intentionally, and these are not proposals, these are not recommendations. These are really just a skeleton of ideas that now we hope we put on the table, and there will be a campus discussion of these ideas, which part of that discussion will be, in some sense, fleshing out sort of what those ideas will look like. Okay? So we hope people will really engage and think, well, let's take this idea seriously, think about what it could look like, and then really think through those the advantages and limitations. The last thing I have to say is the one thing we really want is feedback. We want to hear lots of feedback in a kind of very engaged way through forums like this. We're having a series of forums. You can also send us emails directly to the fsreview@cornell.edu email that we've set up. Yes, our goal is to get lots of feedback. No decisions have been made yet and won't be made until we get back. Judy, do you want to add anything?
Sure. And I'm limiting my speaking here because I've got a wicked head cold, and if I start coughing, I'm going to head out the door. So limit your exposure. So I'm appreciative of Ted doing the introduction. I'll just add two things. One is that the committee operated under an assumption of zero sum, meaning we couldn't come back to the provost charged this committee, we couldn't come back to the provost with a proposal that was going to cost the university $50 million in new funding. We had to assume that whatever we were proposing could happen under the existing funding situation that we have now. Now, that's not to say that the provost is not willing to invest in the social sciences. He has said he is willing to do that, but that just was not our operating constraint. And it really does change the way you think about things if you're required to think about zero sum. The other variable or feature of our process was that we were specifically prohibited from thinking about obstacles. So any kind of a structural change at a university, you can immediately start to think of all the things that would get in the way of that. We did not allow ourselves to think about those things. We only thought about the idea, what could happen if we had whatever the structural change was, and really walked around inside the idea trying to explore what if, what could happen if we did this. So we didn't think about obstacles. It was really very much a blue sky exercise, and I, as I said a couple of times already, if you ever get a chance to do a purely blue sky exercise, do it. It's a lot of fun. But those were the sort of guiding principles that the committee had. I think that's everything.
So if you have any questions, comments, or feedback, please raise your hand or flag it. I'll start a speaker's list, and I'll call on your name.
So, first off, thank you very much for coming. I appreciate that. I appreciate the time you put into the report and everything there. I must say, I'm a JDMA, I'm also an ILR alum. So, as you may imagine, second at the proposed for the idea of interested in emerging human ecology in ILR got my attention, and it got my alumni friends' attention, my faculty and fellows' attention. And I know that this is just an idea, but from what I'm hearing from alumni, and those who I just removed from Cornell, is they think it is more than an idea. I think it is a proposal. So if your intent is to just be an idea, I would strongly recommend you find some way to clarify, perhaps first communication is a way to clarify that, because I can't tell you where I'm about to point 16. So many people have contacted me who were in my year saying, oh my God, you're so on campus, how can we stop this murder? And I've been trying to explain to them, well, it's an idea. It seems like right now, politically, an idea is getting a relatively frothy reception, but it's just an idea. I don't want your committee and the rest of the work you did to get overshadowed by that, so I would just strongly recommend that we can clarify that.
Thank you.
Did you want to add?
I mean, mostly I would say thank you. I mean, we've been doing our best to try to get that message out, and we're having a hard time getting through to people.
So the more effort you put into that communication, the more helpful you are to us. We appreciate that.
Next, I have Anisha. So, go back to that what Matt said. You said that there are eight ideas in the report. Who will ultimately make the decision? Is that resting in your committee? Will that rest in the provost's hands? Who is ultimately responsible for selecting which idea we choose to move forward with?
So which, if any, would be the right way to phrase that?
Yeah, sure.
And it would be the provost and the president. The committee has actually been dissolved at this point. They were charged with a task. They did what they were asked to do, generated a report. Ted and I are the only ones that are still actively involved in the process.
Yeah. Because you're doing this community feedback process, will you guys be generating or writing some sort of a, I don't want to say proposal, but like recommendation to the president and the provost regarding the ideas or options the community seems to be?
Well, so right now, as my observed experience is the provost is reading the stuff as it comes in, the input as it comes in. So we will have to sit together and try to assemble it all. There's a lot of different sources of information coming in, but he's very much engaged in it already.
Thank you.
Yep.
Any other question or comments? Samir?
So I was looking at the report for a bit, and it looks like the majority of the considerations that were made were specifically surrounding research. And I was wondering what considerations were made towards undergraduate and postgraduate experience, and how did that play into the ranking of the majors?
So I would say, certainly from the undergraduate, we're thinking about opportunities. In some sense, thinking about ways in which the different types of things might expand or reduce opportunities. So you can see the advantages and disadvantages of different ideas that often shows up in one place or the other. At some level, similar for the graduate students in graduate education, I think the biggest one there is the discussion of the graduate fields, which I think is quite relevant. And a lot of that is about, well, the chunk of it is about clearly articulating what different fields are to help clarify exactly, so that if you're an incoming student, where should you be going? And I guess the last thing I'd say about graduate education is related to that, but I think the way the committee, and at least a lot of faculty do, is research is about graduate education, kind of all mixed up together.
Certainly the center proposal,
yeah.
That's a part of this, has a lot of relevance to graduate education.
Next, I have percent effects. Yes, I wanted to see if you could go over the idea of the restructuring graduate studies in social sciences. I thought that was one of the things, but I don't know if you've gone over that.
So it's in the report. So in the report, we basically talk about two parts of this. And again, this is not meant to be a kind of grand, let's redo everything. It was rather ideas that where they would be helpful to think about using them. And so one of those is for graduate fields that sort of are big and in particular across multiple academic units, multiple departments. To try to find a way to make those fields operate closer to the ideal that we often talk about with graduate fields, where it's one big group and we're all part of the same thing, and there's not sort of the core and the periphery, but rather it's sort of one sort of community. So that's one piece of that. And then the second piece of that is when there's overlap in terms of students and faculty in different fields, to actually look in, either to do one of two things, to try to clearly articulate what the differences are between those, so again, to create clarity for students and faculty. And if we don't see differences, then maybe think about forms of consolidation. So again, looking for clarity. So those are the two main things that we talked about in the report.
Hi, so first, thanks for coming in to talk about this. I think that a question on many people's minds is like, timeline going forward from this approval discussion, right? Like, how long are you expecting to be getting feedback before you move into like the next phase of whatever happens, per se? And what would that next phase look like?
So I would say that this aspect, this listening process that we're in right now, this will go until people stop talking to us. So we will be listening as long as it takes. If it needs to go into the fall, we'll go into the fall. There's no time limit on this. And then what happens is, as we're saying, the provost is, and we'll be discussing all the input that's been received. And then my guess, although this hasn't been fixed, but my guess is that if there were certain ideas that were favored based on the input we received, then they would go into a further development. This is a very, these ideas are really only sketched in the report, right? It's very, we were intentionally way up here, and they need a lot more development. So I would guess, although we haven't specifically discussed this, that the next phase would be developing one or more of those ideas further to really start to see what it, how it would work.
And then eventually coming back to us with that idea.
I'm sure that it will.
Great.
There'll be more opportunity to talk. Yep.
So I have a question about the CHE-ILR merger. So as one of the advantages listed that you talked about, and also in your slides on the 10 to 15 year timeline, you talked about improving recruiting and retention for faculty and grad students. But I'm curious what your rationale is for that, given the example of the hotel pool in which faculty have left in droves because of changes in tenure requirements and the loss of brand identity. I'm curious, could you expand on how this merger would improve retention?
Retention for faculty.
And grad students, yeah.
Yep.
Go ahead. I mean, on some level, so this is at least the thoughts on the committee, is to the extent that, that sort of new connections get made, that, that people are collaborating and working with people in ways that lead to sort of productive new partnerships, that that just improves sort of research, you know, as well as, in some sense, research at both the faculty and grad student level. And I think that's, in some sense, the biggest thing there. In terms of the recruitment and retention, so creating a new environment.
Any other questions? I have more of a general question. I'm curious to learn more about the genesis of the idea of the merger, sort of just what problem it's designed to solve and why it's potentially more possible to solve that problem.
So again, as Ted said before, we really weren't trying to solve problems. We were trying to think of ways that Cornell could be organized so that 15 years from now, it would be as strong as possible in the social sciences. And this observation that has been made over the years, going back a long way, 50 years now, right? 50 years, is that we are very distributed, and that we have a lot of social sciences here, but we aren't recognized for it that the, as much as we could be, because the sum is not equal to the whole is not equal to the sum of the parts. I always get that wrong. So the idea would be to aggregate social scientists. One thing that would happen if you brought CHE and ILR together, first of all, you've got two units that are very similar in the way, in a lot of ways, in the way they think about their work. So they tend to be interdisciplinary. They're sort of philosophically, in the way they approach their scholarship, there are similarities there that the committee saw. This is all just part of the discussion. But if you were to bring them together, you've got about 50 social scientists in ILR, and you've got maybe 80 in UMEC. You bring those together into one larger college. Neither one of those units goes away. They just sort of assemble with one another. Now you have about the same number of social scientists in that unit that you have in art and you have in the business college. So the social scientists now are in recognizable units that are all about the same size on campus, each with different orientations, understandably, but it is an aggregation effect. And so when you bring people together, as Ted was saying, it's an opportunity for those people to interact in a way that perhaps they haven't had before, just because of the distribution.
Any other questions? Yes.
So I'd like to ask about the quick suggestion about the possibility of consolidation should overlap the theme in thinking about performance. And so, I, of course, this report is very high level. Consolidation and merger are very high level words, but of course, we know have very specific, concrete realities for lots of folks, which can sometimes be folks who maybe aren't tenure track folks who are grad students, assistantships, not having the job opportunities. So I was wondering, as you're at that high level thinking about consolidation, what kind of things are you thinking about what consolidation might look like on the ground? And of course, I know, again, it's a high level thing, but I'm just wondering what.
So you, in terms of consolidation of graduate fields, or?
When you were answering the question before, saying that you look at if research in amongst faculty and grad students were overlapping, either being, you said.
Yeah, that was when I was talking about the graduate fields. Okay. So I mean, on some level there, I mean, that, again, the difference at Cornell between departments and fields. So that was a statement not about departments. It was more a statement about the graduate fields and how people in different departments get connected through graduate fields, and how grad students who might be working with faculty in different departments get connected via graduate fields. And mostly trying to get at that in some cases, if it looks like two graduate fields are overlapping in a way where it's kind of the same faculty in both fields, and grad students being in one versus the other, but it's not obvious why they're in one field versus the other, given they're working with the same set of faculty, then maybe that's a place where some consolidation could take place. But again, it wouldn't eliminate jobs. It would be a different way in which people interact at the graduate field level. Does that make sense?
I actually was looking for a more concrete version of a different way of people interacting. So I can imagine how that would happen.
Well, probably for prospective students, I would say, in some sense, knowing sort of, if I want to work with faculty members A, B, and C, and they're both in field one and field two, how do I decide where to go? What's the difference between these fields? Situations like that where we're thinking about consolidation.
So, thank you. We have time for one more question. We have Brianna here.
I'm not a question.
So I'll give you the chance to ask the last question.
So you say that you're on the same tour now and that Provost is taking all this feedback. I just wonder, what kind of guarantee can you give us that whatever feedback is taken will be followed, given the experience of the business school and hotel school had large opposition against it and yet was forced to merge anyway? What kind of guarantees can you give us that feedback we give you will actually be heard by the provost, the president, or trustees, and that whatever plan takes place, whatever merger or non-merger, will be something that is agreed to and is supported by faculty and students, such as the department college involved?
Well, Terry Tech can comment on this as well. I would just try to answer in a way that provost has answered this question when he's been with us on these sessions before, and that is that the process this time, this process is very different from the process that surrounded the creation of the College of Business. There are eight ideas on a piece of paper right now, and we're going around and listening to anybody on campus who wants to talk to us about it. That's quite different from what happened with the College of Business. And it's clear that this process has been informed by that experience. So it's a very different process this time. There's a wide range of ideas in the report. There isn't just one. And it's the structure and the process is really very different from last time. So will they listen? I can't put myself in the mind of the provost and the president. I can't speak for them. I'm assuming that they will. If they weren't interested in listening, we wouldn't be doing all of this.
So for other people who might have more questions and want more clarification, what would be the best way to contact you?
Send us emails to the fsreview@cornell.edu.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So next on our agenda, we have. We have a special division breakout session for today. So, and as we have been ramping up this issue, everyone has heard about the GPCI. Nate did a short presentation on this issue, and he's also spearheading efforts to start writing and get, you know, going with this document. But what we thought would be very helpful is we have actually invited a lot of people who have worked directly and very intensively with this document. And so they're all here, and they will be leading small group discussions on the issues that they work with the most. So Manisha will give you more direction on this.
So for the first half of division breakout today, you're not going to go to your division. You're going to go to whichever topic interests you the most or you get the most excited about, and then we'll give you the warning tell me where to go for voting.
Yeah,
you could flip between a couple if you want. Feel free. I think all the people who are monitoring would be okay to kind of move between a couple perhaps.
Diversity
and inclusion. Yeah, diversity and inclusion. International. Oh, international students, actually. But I think that you can say diversity and inclusion. So, oh my god, okay. So, here's how we're going to split up for this portion. So, Jan, sense of community, is going to be down here. Don't move until I finish. Jana is going to be down here, and she's talking about family services. Julie is going to be over here talking about housing. Up in that corner where Chris is, that's going to be, I love, Graduate Student Center. And then Sarah is up right over there, and that's where diversity and inclusion is going to be. So in the next 20 minutes, decide where you'd like to be, go ask questions of them, get feedback. This first. Consider my pocket.
Thank you. So in essence, what we're changing is we're adding diversity in a national group of representatives, and we're internally elected. So it's not it's a good idea. That's a tack on. I think this will be the seats. Is it from 9 for us? Is it 3-3-3?
This is 4-3-2.
Yeah, because it's based on enrollment.
That's
mathematically works. And then in terms of, I noticed these are master's students, so that is seems that like half the grad program student population is like one or two of your master's students.
Yeah.
They don't have, Richard Rose was getting four. Yeah. Turns out they're half of them, way less. They're getting four dedicated seats, and then they're getting all the division seats, like humanities and stuff. They're going to have one of the seats that's like freshmen for the reserve for master's students.
Yeah.
So like a master's student will get it if they want it, but no master's wanted it, they'll go back to anyone.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you. So the language looks really complex.
It makes sense. I'm glad that I was concerned. Because that last week, I heard it last.
Yes.
I'm glad that
we talked about it. It's like, I'm going to write back to you. I thought I completely forgot.
So we were changing things up until 0
because I found out the last bit was in the election rule, which is interesting. Go for it, just mirror it, but I think it'll kind of appreciate it.
Yeah.
It will. Yes. Yeah, I was talking to Gabrielle, she worked with the LCSCL, right? And they're thinking we'll do like, the care they will do options where they can end up spring, like in April, so that they can be seated and then the Avery Practical Force is the biggest preferred method. The CLSA would change so that there's fall as one LRAP, an LM rep, in like February it's the whole board, and then in April it's just for GPSA. Now we actually have three seats.
Yeah.
So. I'm very concerned about this for the lottery.
But
in what he had in the interview, I didn't think he was doing it. It wasn't sounding like, oh, we love it.
Thank you.
I'm going to
You are. Okay. So that is, that's good. Because mathematically, everyone else
just a simple bit of numbers, just to make sure that that didn't change anything.
Okay.
But I'm going to verify that. I mean, I don't want to screw this up.
I'm actually just going to run and grab this.
Yeah, no worries. Okay, yeah. That was good. Perfect, because if we add 80 veterans, it works out because right now it's 723 lawsuits over 3, it's 241 students per week. We have 436 with 80. And divide that by 2, it's about 260, it's roughly the same ratio. So I think that'll work great.
Okay, perfect. I'll bring that back here.
Awesome, thanks. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Thank you.
No problem, thank you.
Oh, no, we're to the door.
Thank you. do that as the first part of my update.
Let's move on to the next item on the agenda. We have policy updates. First is Zach.
Okay, so the first thing we're going to do during my update is go through and announce who all of your voting members are and who the new division chief is. So I'm going to go ahead and start with Humanities and Jesse.
So our new voting members are Kristen Yerke, Becca Harrison, and Danny Lanzo Gomez, and Kristen is going to be the division chief.
Hi, my name is Leslie Pope. I'm the new division chief for the life sciences, and the other voting members are Kavya and Cinnamon.
So we now have our new division chief, Mo Pelagi, and then our voting members are Margaret Dudolski, Ekrima Monarco, and Lindsay.
Yes, I think so. So we have our new division chief, Dutch Aurora, and we have the additional voting members here in the device, Peter Geisler and Nathan London.
Great.
I'm going to ask new voting members to just touch base with Matt afterwards to make sure that you get on fully served. Okay. The next thing is your battery's about to die.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Consensual relationship policy. So I know we've talked about this before, but the Consensual Relationship Policy Committee has drafted two policies. Consensual Relationship Policy A and Consensual Relationship Policy B. They are identical except in one respect. CRP A prohibits sexual and romantic relationships between faculty and graduate professional students if both are affiliated with the same graduate field or degree program. CRP-B allows for such relationships provided there is disclosure and an appropriate refusal plan. So if people would like to talk about the two policies, that's the time now, and then at the end, I will give a primer on how the sense of the body vote is going to take place. So if you have any comments or anything else you want to bring up based on this, please raise your hand or placard. Yes.
Hi. So I have two questions. The first one was, so what are the main, so I'm guessing this is basically the only difference, but in terms of other big things the policy is establishing that may be different from what we heard from the central relationship podcast previously. Is there anything different, or is it basically what was presented the last time, except for these two differences?
I think it's about the same. I don't know if there's anybody on the committee here who knows, but my understanding is that it's the same with this key difference, because that's what they got the most feedback on.
Okay. And my second question was, so we have to, so we're currently under voting procedures, you know, vote on this or figure out what we're going to do in terms of this. I'm guessing the faculty assembly is also going to engage in some sort of procedure. Do you know what the timeline slash procedure for that is?
Yeah, so they are actually meeting this Wednesday to discuss the proposed policy and take a vote on whether or not they're going to adopt either of the policies. So that will be taking place this Wednesday at the faculty summit meeting.
3:30 to 5
in ILR. And if you're interested in a specific room, come find me after I'll give it to you.
Sure. Okay. So, what happens if we vote for CPRP and they go to me on Wednesday, they vote for CRP A? Like, what would be the procedure if like, we vote for?
Jesse, do you have an opinion? I mean, I have one thing. So, what's the situation is that these sense of the body votes will go back to the committee, which will then tell President Pollard that this is what people think, and President Pollard will be making decisions based on. So, if there's divergent votes, and faculty and driver functions disagree, and we're putting it to President Paul's desk, and it is then kind of the impetus is to make a policy. So there's not one in favor of the other that I know of off the top of my head that at least the public has said. The idea would be that would be that. That there's disagreement and a policy needs to be made. How should we do that? And the President Policy is very, very committed to making a policy happen on any
action. And we could also put forward a resolution against how the policy stands.
I just wanted to note briefly, as we were voting, there was part of the discussion we had last week with the charter change of professional students and talking about arguing for masters. This is something that's not really representative for professional or master students. Making up, regularly we combine them with over half of the graduate professional student body. So just to note that, I mean, just to note the size difference between a graduate field versus the Johnson Graduate School Business, which is 1,200 people, is very large, and that will, so in terms of, it seems like, to me, I'm concerned that it has a lot of really granularity of the fact that some graduate fields can be quite small, whereas the graduate schools and the master's programs can be quite large. And just to note that right now we're not representative, we're hoping to fix that, but still being bound into this code.
That's a great point, and let me pull out the results of the survey that we talked about, which didn't specifically have these two policies, but touched on it, and there was actually large survey from the best school. So we have some more information on how the professional schools voted. Let me pull up those numbers, so sorry.
And the voting for this ballot is also not anonymous, so you will put on your department. So they will be able to discern sort of like who voted for what.
I'm just pulling it up.
Any other questions? Yes?
So I just want to echo what Matt said. And this is that we have an excellent turnout from the best school, but I just want to further elaborate by saying that generally professional schools draw from a lot of different graduate fields and degree programs, particularly in the faculty venues. So we're not just top ACS, we're also top by DVM PhDs, PhDs, et cetera, et cetera. So I think it, as it stands, disproportionately affects professional students who are deciding to see OCA.
Any other comments?
Sorry, I'm still looking at it.
Yeah. Oh, Mina, maybe you could just show it. I'll link it to you. Sorry. I'll go with you. But we can at least, so the survey will be open until the meeting ends. So you can take a look at the link and how the GPA survey broke down in a second, or even up here. So here's the breakdown of who voted, had, how they voted. There is this plus 89 for social sciences because there was like a bunch submitted all at the same time, and we're not sure those are valid, but they're there.
Can you
zoom in, Lydia? So any other comments or feedback?
And what's against and supporting referring to, just refreshing?
It's against or supporting the opportunity to field ban. So whether there should be a ban on faculty-grad
student relationship within the field or in grad.
So support would be in favor of A and against would be in favor of B.
Yes, essentially, yes.
And so you want to tell people how they can vote?
Yeah, did you have one last one? Okay.
I was just wondering how this affects, like, for instance, MNGs who are not really in the field per se, and it's all, we're not also a professional school. So, yeah, how does this affect that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know what, like, sort of, yeah.
Sorry, the committee's not here, so I would say just worst case would be the entire college, but yeah, or whatever the other end. Yeah. Okay. So, regarding voting, everybody who is a member, so if you are a field representative or a voting member, you can participate in this event of the body vote.
So you should have gotten a link from me to a Qualtrics survey that's going to ask for your name, your department, and then whether you're in favor of A, B, or if you don't support either policy. So please just fill it out once. It should be only filled out by the field rep. Or if there are two, both of you can fill it out. And all of this will get passed along to the committee and the faculty staff.
Okay, is that it for exec updates?
Yes.
Okay, that's it for me. So next we have operations.
Two things. One, I'm going to ask the committee chairs to meet with me briefly at the end of this meeting today. And two, since we're still discussing the misconduct protocol, we think it'll make more sense to work on it over the summer so that we can have an impact on the bylaw updates at the beginning of next semester.
Next, communications. Appropriations.
We have a meeting on Friday at 6 p.m. in Morrison, probably in the but it's mostly bringing ideas to get more membership, because like there's five of us and more than half of us probably not going to come back. So we need new membership. We
AC looking for new members.
Yes.
Finance.
So as most of you probably know, it's a budget about how we extended the deadline for application or budget not for funding as well as for any lack of funding for this academic year. So those two budget hearings will close on Thursday next Monday, I believe, the 30th. You can submit those requests up until then. Then expect another email shortly about funding for the next academic year, but those requests will be due fall. So
SAC.
Sorry. Okay. So we're having our last committee meeting next Monday at 2 o'clock in the Journal Hall, room GO1. There'll be lots of good food since it'll be our last meeting of the semester. Also we, in conjunction with CGSU, are going to host an event called Let's Talk About Bad Advising next Thursday at, can you tell me the time?
Starts at 4:30, goes until 6.
And the room is to be announced, but if you want to come to that, which you should, just follow the staff Facebook and find the link, or email me at bmk76 and I'll email you all the information.
Okay, Disc.
Hi, everybody. So there's two things that I want to announce for Disc. We have one more event this semester. That'll be Wednesday. We're having a lunch with a Dean of Students, Vijay Kendakur. He's relatively new to campus, and we'd like to get to know some graduate professional students better. So it'll be a great opportunity to meet with Vijay, get to know him a little bit, and also learn about what the Dean of Students Office does, and the units that are within that, and what they can do for graduate professional students. And maybe give them a little bit of a heads up that graduate professional students are here too. And that'll be at noon in the Willard Strait International Lounge. I just shared the Facebook event on the DISC Facebook page, so if you're not already liking that page, you'll like the page and check out the event there. And then the second, just an announcement, DISC, along with SAC and other organizations on campus, is co-sponsoring the Graduate and Professional Student Spring Recognition Banquet, which is next Monday. At 5 p.m. in G10 Biotech, and that's an opportunity for us to recognize the accomplishments of all of the graduate and professional students over the past year. So that's co-sponsored by OIC, the OIC Leadership Council, the Diversity Programs in Engineering, a bunch of other places. So that's it's a fun event. There's dinner, there's music, there's awards. It's a lot of fun. So That's also been shared on the DISC Facebook page, so go hit that like button.
We'll share it. We'll share it. Thank you. Programming?
Hi, everyone. Just another reminder that Grabball is happening in a little under 2 weeks, from Meeting with the Earth, May 6th, from 7 to 11. Field rep, I did send out an email to all of you that I'm hoping you will forward to your various constituents. It'll take you like 20 seconds, and I will be unbelievably appreciative. There will be, once again, transportation. If you have any questions, you can shoot me an email. And we still have about 300 tickets available. And finally, we will be looking for a new chair for the programming board next year. So if anyone's interested in what that entails, you can also email me at cjc365.
JC?
So I think the only update that I have is that we will ultimately be responsible to fill our own seat on the general committee. I don't believe he's here, but he can come to me or him if you have questions, but we don't have any other updates.
That's
the
word for
Sorry, our chair announced it today, but I just want to say we got 82 submissions for the faculty awards. It's a little bit lower than previous years, so the quality is still excellent. We could at some point over the next week or so, we're going to read through all of those, and you can really use your help doing that. So if you'd like to read heartwarming things about how wonderful the Cornell faculty are, please come up and be right happy. It's one of the like smallest, easiest, and most happy ways that you can possibly help with the thing of GPSA, in my opinion. And it's really like pretty much need you for like the next week to meet once to decide who the winners are and then to go to a party to celebrate the winners. So pretty low from the pretty chill. This is my third year on the committee, it's like my favorite thing to do. So highly recommend it. And again, if you just got any spare time in the next week or so, I hope that you're kind of thing. It'd be really great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Grad school?
Just a repeat of the announcement from last time on Friday, May 4th at 4 o'clock, we have a special event recognizing all members of GPSA. Good food and a gift. Gifts due to be shipped overnight on May 3rd, our shippings. And if you have any questions, I can answer one or two there. Eugene, do you have a question?
Well, I was going to ask what type of food will be served at this?
Vegan products.
Fancy food.
Oh.
Well, but we haven't ordered it yet, so.
Eugene,
what would you like?
No, I don't know.
You want food on a stick?
Just include their dietary preferences.
Oh, we definitely will.
Thanks. His body would appreciate that. Okay, so in the interest of time, we have to move on to the next agenda item. We have one new business, introduction to Resolution 16, in support of further discussion on proposed curricular changes to language requirements in the College of Arts and Sciences.
I'm going to motion to extend the meeting by 10 minutes so we don't interrupt Jesse.
Is there a second?
Yes.
Okay, is there any dissent? Seeing none, the meeting is extended by 10 minutes.
And is that the... Okay, so I hope everybody got a chance to look over it. Motion to waive reading the whole thing.
Yeah.
So basically, last month in March, the Committee for Curricular Development in the College of Arts and Sciences released a recommendation of a whole bunch of revisions they want to see, they recommend being made to the College of Arts and Sciences curriculum. And one of those recommended changes is a reduction of the language requirement. Mm-hmm. And this is something that, so a week after the report came out, a letter to the editor appeared in the Daily Sun, signed by 89 faculty members across the College of Arts and Sciences. I know because I counted. I think almost every single faculty member in the Department of Romance Studies signed the letter. Since then, I've been in touch with graduate students in Romance Studies, and there's also pretty near unanimous agreement amongst graduate students that this is not a good idea. The Romance Studies graduate students have explicitly pointed out what is implicit in the letter to the editor that the faculty wrote, and that is a great concern that this reduction would mean a reduction in teaching and funding opportunities for graduate students in fields that service language courses. So this resolution is proposed as a way to say we basically are in support of our constituents. I personally think that when there is such unanimous agreement amongst our constituents that are most directly affected by a policy change, it is our duty as a representative assembly to formally put our affirmation on that to show that we are in solidarity with our constituents. The resolution points out that even though Cornell does not, Cornell administration does not acknowledge graduate students as employees, we expect that in decisions that are going to reduce any kind of requirement or reduce course offerings, that graduate student labor be given at least the same kind of dignity and respect as employees. And that means taking into consideration loss of jobs when making a decision like this. The resolve clauses also point out that we are disagreeing, we are supporting the unanimous disagreement with a specific part of the recommendations. So it affirms, for example, the call to have sign languages, for example, be a language that is recognized for the language requirement. So being able to support individual aspects without kind of broad strokes throwing everything out, right? So that's what the resolution is doing. We can talk more about it. The last thing that I want to say is that I actually want us to be able to vote on it today, because the committee also recommends that the faculty in the College of Arts and Sciences on May 1st make a vote on this, if it seems like that's possible. So I talked way too fast, but that's trying to make the meeting shorter. So there you go. Questions? And then comments, right?
Yes, so I signed my name on this, so yes. I'm recusing myself, and Manisha will be chairing this portion.
Oh,
yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so right now we are on an introduction of the resolution, so if you have any questions or comments specifically for the sponsor, that's what's happening right now, and then we'll entertain a motion to move into the formal discussion. First, I'm a speakerless first person, I'd be
Yeah, I'd like to know if this has been presented, what the stated rationale from the committee was for making these reductions, because there seem to be reasons that might outweigh, you articulated some very real, very reasonable concerns about this. There are certain reasons that might outweigh some of those, and some that I would just want to throw out the window. So what are their stated rationale?
So the committee believes that, and if folks can think of more off the top of their heads than I will, please chime in. But the committee believes that folks are dissuaded from being undergraduates are dissuaded from joining the College of Arts and Sciences by the language requirement. The committee also notes that the language requirement makes study abroad more difficult, and they want to recommend that the language requirement for studying abroad also be changed. Some graduate students in Romance Studies have articulated the ways in which those reasons, which I guess are adjacent to the labor issue that I've highlighted, are also issues with the kind of overall curriculum, and folks, Romance Studies faculty and graduate students have pointed out that these other rationales, tend to flatten the work that is done in language classrooms, that goes beyond the kind of rote memorization that some folks who aren't in the field tend to think of as what the paradigm of a language classroom is. There's been good work from faculty and graduate students speaking to those adjacent concerns as well as the labor concerns. So we can, if folks are present and want to speak to those, we can do that too.
Great. Next
comment
is Alex.
Do we have anything about what other peer institutions have in terms of the language requirements?
I don't off the top of my head as answering the question right now, but yes, we like the demand is out there. That wasn't part of the report though.
Did I present?
Oh, sorry. I think Carol, can you answer that question?
Oh, no.
Andy, you're not on my
favorite list. I think I might be able to answer that. Compared to other peer institutions, other institutions, there's definitely no law standards. And therefore, the procedure of the program and the university itself would be in the. Besides Brown, I don't think there's other standards. So, doesn't have these violations.
Next comment is Carol Rose.
For information, I don't know if you know the answer to this off the top of your head, but did the committee have any data on why they think that students would not be, they don't want to come to the College of Arts and Science because of the language requirement? Did they do a survey, do you know?
Or the data was qualitatively, not quantitatively presented.
Okay, so just interesting.
Yeah, the, based on talking to students, we have heard that. It's almost exactly what it says.
Next on my list is Bree.
So the part about signing images, obviously I really appreciate that. But because no sign language classes are offered at Cornell, is that more of like a, in the future, sign languages are offered?
Part of the committee's recommendation is to have those classes and have those classes too.
There is a resolution going through. We just passed through the essay right now calling for that to be included. Okay, do I have anybody else on the speakers list?
Motion to move into discussion.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, any dissent to moving on to discussion on the formal resolution? Okay, seeing as we're now formally in discussion, I will also entertain the speakers list for this as well.
Quickly, I want to propose as a friendly amendment that, because that's different from what went out on that last resolve clause, because that's different from what went out on Monday. If there's no dissent, just saying that this should be sent not just to President Pollack, but to the Dean of the College of Arts and Sciences.
Do you guys see any dissent to that friendly amendment? Okay, dissent. Any other comments, questions, discussion on this resolution?
Motion to call for question on the resolution.
Second. Okay, we're now formally voting on this resolution. So if you are in favor of resolution 16, in support of further discussion on proposed curricular changes to language requirements in the College of Arts and Sciences, please raise your placard now. If you are opposed, and then any abstentions? Okay, so I have a vote of 17 to 0 to 1. It passes. Next on the agenda is old business. First, we have Resolution 13, calling for the accommodation of international GCAs at Maplewood Apartments. And Alex will be chairing this portion.
So, while Rena pulls that up, we're on formal discussion. So, if anybody has any questions or amendments for the resolution, we're here. Yes.
Is the title
International Student Coordinators
at Maplewood or something? International Student Coordinators. I think it's supposed to be at. Is that a correct name? At?
It's yes, but we'll take that as friendly unless there's dissent.
No.
Yeah.
Okay.
Does anyone else have? I'm opening a speaker's list now for formal discussion. Is there any? Yeah.
Are there any updates or has anyone reached out to sponsors about the possibilities or just kind of let it happen?
We got have not been reached out to regarding this resolution or this update. We did get contact from EDR regarding the questions they were going to use when hiring the new set of GCAs and questions regarding feedback about inclusivity of those questions, but nothing regarding the content of this resolution.
I can actually add after that. We also mentioned 15 as well.
Yes.
Yes.
Which he's been brought in from early on.
Yes.
I have a short amendment and just a brief justification for it. I think that it's going to read it a little bit stronger this way, even though people might disagree with me on that. But line 112, to have that just read, whereas we reject the idea that community leadership is to strike out or destroy our role from this proposal.
Okay, so it's
just to strike out the words are distraught by this and this proposal and. So it should read, we reject the idea that community leadership seems exclusively consisting of and so on.
Unless I hear anything from the other sponsors, I'm willing to take that as friendly.
Okay.
Nate, for VCAL.
No, I agree with the amendment. I think the amendment, the amendment process is not. We shouldn't be friendly amendment at this point.
All right. This is a discussion. Thank you. Is it better motion to call the question on the amendment?
Second.
All right. Is there dissent to this amendment? All right. Seeing none, amendment passes. All right. We are now back to formal discussion. I believe Jesse is next.
Yeah, I have a very another very short amendment. It's literally a one word on 128. Paint the word game so that paint you can use.
Who's that?
128.
Yeah.
Yep.
As paid. To serve as paid community leaders. There's been a second. We're now in discussion on that amendment. All right.
Second.
There's a second. Is there any dissent to call the question? No. Okay. Is there any dissent to the amendment? Seeing none, we're now back. The amendment is approved. We're now back at the formal discussion on the resolution. All right, there's been a second on a motion to call the question on the resolution as a whole. Is there any dissent to call the question? All right, seeing none, I'm going to have voting members raise their placards for all those in favor of this resolution. All right, all those opposed? And all those abstaining. Right, so by a count of 17-0-1, the resolution passed.
Next, we have updating the byline procedures, eligibility criteria, and obligations. Cassandra? Did you want to propose?
Yeah, so I'd like to propose a couple of amendments which I've already included in the language up here. For the resolution itself. For the resolution itself, the intention is that these are appendices which belong at the end of the document. We didn't specify what document, so it's just a line which says, be it further resolved, appendix A and appendix B will be appended to the end of the specific charter.
Okay, so there's been an amendment. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. So we're now in discussion of for this amendment. Is there a second? Is there a dissent to calling the question? Seeing none, is there dissent to approving this amendment? Seeing none, the amendment passes.
Great. I would like to propose an amendment in Appendix A.
Stop it.
Not all the red. That's, the red is from Black Pine. The region didn't make it black.
I don't like this.
So in line 85, what I'd like to do is, because A is confusing, and B, because it's wrong, and C, because we use different language in another section which says what we mean. So strike with the caveat that the organization may not receive more than its initial request during that byline cycle. Two, not to exceed the current final application request. So this is the language which is in Appendix B. I think it's a lot clearer, and it's what we intended for.
Is there a second on the amendment?
Second.
Okay, we're now on discussion. Is there a motion to vote? Or a question? Okay, motion to call the question. Is there any dissent to calling the question? Seeing none, is there any dissent to this amendment? Okay, seeing none, the amendment passes.
So I would like to propose an amendment. I have a few more. So can we go to Appendix B, please? And then let's go to 149.
Okay.
And so in this, again, for clarity's sake, most of these things are for clarity's sake, I wanted to begin the sentence with the word initial to clarify that this is the first time it's presented, and then also on that line to add for any level of funding to an organization. Yeah, there we go.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
Okay, now we're on the discussion for this amendment. I'm advocating a motion. Okay, is there a second? Okay, so is there any dissent to doing this amendment, putting initial and any level of funding to an organization? Okay, seeing none. The amendment passes.
Okay, I amend that on line 157, I really apologize for this. So I've added a clause here because one of the things that we talked about last week that we didn't have a procedure for, that we now have a procedure for, is what happens if the Appropriations Committee comes forward with the initial recommendation to eliminate funding. And so this language is already part of Appendix B, which again goes out to the byline organizations themselves. This is for us. Appendix A. But this is to, again, be clear about what the process is.
Okay.
Any
dissent, comment, question? Seeing none, is there dissent passing this amendment? Okay. The amendment passes.
And I've got one more amendment. My last one.
The last one.
Where am I going?
So 44.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. And then I'd like to add 44. 44.
44.
44.
Oh my God. That's not what you said.
Okay.
44.
44. B.
Yeah, no.
No, B.
Okay, I think it's gone down. Okay, so here, we're a different line now. So I'm proposing adding this subclause, which is travel includes lodging, transportation, meals, and registration fees.
Sure, second.
Okay, we're now in discussion. Okay. Any dissent on questions? Seeing none, is there any dissent to this amendment? Okay, seeing none, the amendment passes. I don't think the AC, the sponsor said anymore. Are we?
No.
Anybody have any feelings?
So I would like to propose another amendment. I just realized this. So there's a situation going on, because all of you have read it, so you're all aware of the situation. But so we have potentially one more year of giving money to Annabelle's Grocery. However, the byline cycle is 2 years, which means the second year that money comes in, we're not going to give it to Annabelle's. It'll be ours to do with what we want. So what people in the AP wanted to do, but we don't, we're not necessarily pushing that, is we would like to see a kind of an emergency fund for graduate professional students be created. And so the language that's here, this was draft language. What I would like to do is add the word preferably. So the further in the language and assembly and
preferably?
Yeah, can we just add a preferably for right here?
Preferably.
Yeah.
Preferably.
Preferably.
Both
preferably
or preferably?
Yeah.
I think it's
just
good.
It doesn't matter. If it doesn't matter, I'm going to Okay, I withdraw the
amendment. Okay, so we are back to discussion on the resolution and Appendix A and B.
Second.
Okay, any dissent, comment, questions? Okay, seeing none, all those in favor, voting members, please raise your placards. Of the whole resolution. Oh, we're voting on the whole resolution. Those opposed? Abstaining? Okay, so with a vote of 17-0-1, the resolution passes. And we still have one more. Yes.
Motion to be 17 by 5 minutes, but I think we're going to be done in 5 minutes.
Okay, is there a second?
Sure, second.
Okay, you're set. We're extending the meeting by 5 more minutes. Okay, seeing none, we're going until 7:15. And we have the last thing on our agenda is GPSA Resolution 15, ensuring equal representation for professional students in the GPSA. They have had a lot of changes.
Yeah, so we're going to work through it. I think it's best to sort of work through it in chunks and then explain what those resolutions, why those amendments are, answer any questions, and then just formally submit everything at the end of one omnibus amendment. So, we'll work through it and then we'll talk about it. Yeah, so these are.
The whereas clauses are just introducing the operative clauses in essence. The big changes, the big three, are adding diversity in international students' representatives, adding reallocating a little bit of the master's seats, and tweaking a teeny bit of how the professional seats are done. The whereas clauses introduce that, and they're the same as you should have in your packet.
So this is the first change. Do you want to? Okay, so one of the biggest changes, we got a lot of feedback from Arvind and some members of the Diversity International Students Committee about creating essentially diversity in international students' seats. So one of the responsibilities for voting members is now is that each division shall internally appoint one diversity in international students representative. This representative shall attend all BISC meetings or its successor committee meetings within the academic year and serve as a contact point and voice for D&I students and relative concerns. All voting members must serve as either the chair or member of at least one GPSA internal committee and shall attend all regularly scheduled meetings of those committees. And then the last one is essentially calling on voting members to serve on the GPCI committee. Those are the three big changes from the last meeting's resolution. Does anyone have any questions on that? Yeah, there are more. There's more coming.
Yeah.
Okay.
I do have a question.
Yeah.
So, what's the method of enforcing that sort of thing? If, like, you have a D&I rep and they don't go to these committee meetings, for example?
It would pretty much be the chair of the committee, so Eugene, reaching out to me, and then we would have to exact vote to unseat. So, it would be, it's an attendance thing, we would then vote to unseat the member, and they would have the opportunity to come back and explain why they weren't, or plead their case and try to get reseated. But it's part of the attendance protocol, so except would vote on seats.
Any questions or comments on this specific chunk?
Okay. This is the last change, and this is between Samir and Matt, so I'll let them.
Yeah, there's actually another change to this page. My apologies. It turns out changing this means that you change these elections procedures, which is similar to the MAC. I'll explain it in a moment. So anyways, we have the actual amendments, which is right here. So, wait, this is not the version. I will explain it, we'll figure the version. In essence, what it's doing is, the language is all the same, it's not organized. It's creating that all the designated master seats will be, in essence, say the seat for Master's of Engineering, if not filled in the fall semester, it becomes open to any master's student. And in our discussion with Arvind, in looking at the enrollment numbers, it turns out that master's students at Cornell make up about 45-ish% of the entire graduate professional student body. And prior to the resolution, only had 2 seats. This resolution bumps it to 4. But there was a discussion about how you can ensure that there are more master's students in the assembly. But in essence, of course, the question is, you still want, if the people don't come, you don't want an empty assembly. So what Arvind had discussed, and we kind of discussed in a meeting a lot of people were at last week, was having, in essence, some, what we're calling flexible seats. In essence, the way it's worded now is one seat from each division will be preferentially set aside for a master's student, so a master's student wants to sit there where you get that seat. However, if that's not filled by a master's student, it would then revert to anyone in the division. And if no one in the division wanted it, then also it would go to anyone ever. But the last part is already here, so if, say, life sciences never filled their seats, then they never have, it would become at large. This is also setting some seats aside for master's students. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Alright, so we literally just elected voting members earlier today.
Who's me next year?
Okay, so this is not going to affect us over the following year?
Well,
most likely not.
Yeah, so the creation of new seats, that's easy. The the way we're going to do this would go into effect next year, even today.
Okay.
And there is language, which I don't know where it's not here. But this is what it does. The next version of the GPSA's charter is just the procedures based on how you elect people, and it's the language, because right now it says there shall be two master seats. It's changing to four, it's changing to add. It's mirroring lease language down to that. I'm not sure where that language went. I can set it around. It's mirroring that.
Sorry.
Do you think it says? It is not the right version. There's one version.
Okay.
Wait, as a follow-up, so yeah. the voting members' structure would change for the 2019-2020 cycle, where the DNI stuff
would go into effect
for the 2018-2019 cycle.
It's essentially next year would be a transition phase, and so no one is going to lose their seat over this. It would be as things open up and as things become available, people can run for them and we'll fill them, but we're not going to unseat somebody.
Okay.
And so once the president approves this language, then we would elect DNI for the division. But none of these changes are formal or finalized until the president, if we vote for this resolution, until the president approves it.
Thank you.
Any questions, comments? Okay. So is that the section?
Yeah. So in essence, as I said, this is just a matter of fixing through our procedures. Seats that are preferred for the master's students shall be open. If they don't, it's done in the fall. They roll through. And then also, it also fixes this language with right words weirdly. It just clarifies the language. And for the master's seats, it goes through and just, this has been replaced by the fact that we're having dedicated seats above, and that is they're open for anyone. Right? The procedures for how they be voted on. So for master students, because they generally come in the fall, it would be that they can run either today with the regular voting members, or alternatively, the seats are vacant, they can run in the fall when we run everyone else, for instance, if they're one-year masters.
Mary, do you want to talk about this with your...
Yeah. So part of that with the, I guess, the fall semester is that we are leaving that open to field orgs to determine the term limits, because one of the biggest challenges that master students face is that we just don't know about the GPSA when we're coming into it from the beginning of the semester. So that's part of the reason for having that seat open until the end of the fall semester, and also asking a little bit to consider elections in the spring semester as well for one-year master's programs.
Okay, so we are...
I have a question.
Yes.
So... holding a field rep seat or a voting member seat?
Voting member seat for the master's students.
In divisions?
These are for the four.
This is not for the front row.
No,
these are for the four explicit master's seats.
Yes.
So we're now in discussion for this whole omnibus amendment.
You must have called a question on omnibus.
Wait, it looks like there's a question coming back. Oh, it was a question. Yes. But it was just a clarification of, are you saying that all of the people who are, division 1 of them will be a DNI representative, or that anyone can be a DNI representative out of that? Out of the division. So, for example, with life sciences, there are three voting members. They will vote, the life sciences division will decide amongst themselves which one of those who are voting members will serve as the DNI rep.
So what we look at it is, this rule makes it so that every voting member must be a member of a committee. This rule also says that of your voting members, you must always have someone on DISC as well.
And I would also like to clarify that there is absolutely nothing stopping someone who's not a voting member from being on one of these committees.
Yeah. Any other questions?
Mr. Congress, I'm not on this.
Okay. Is there a dissent calling question? Okay, seeing none, I will vote on the amendment. Those in favor, please raise your placard. Those opposed? Abstaining? So with a vote of 13-0-5, the amendment passes. And now we are back to discussion on the whole resolution.
Madam
Motion to extend the meeting by 2 minutes.
Sorry.
Okay, it's done to six. Okay, seeing none. Extend it by 2 minutes. Again, a discussion on the whole resolution.
Motion to call a question on the withdrawal site.
Jesse?
Yeah, I just wanted to add, I appreciate you looking at that omnibus amendment, and I would encourage folks who are out next year to continue thinking about the structure question as it is part of and next to the GPPI question. I want to vote for this resolution, but I'm also not 100% sure that this resolution solves the problem of representation, period, end of sentence. So I want to say that this resolution, I like it, I'm going to vote for it, but we should continue this conversation as well. Folks
are
here,
we can
have
a conversation. Yes. So, I guess one of the questions I have for the master's students, reserved in the field part, I guess something I'm wondering, how are you going to deal with the experience with a lot of masters with the complexity of, pictures on GPSA? Because I've been here for 3.5 years, and a lot of these issues are really, really old. And understand the full history of it. You have to be around for quite a while. And I'm kind of worried that some of these people coming in from the masters may not have the full history of it.
Well, I think part of it is, Samir was an undergrad here. I'm an MBA student. I was an undergrad. So people go straight through. I think it's also why it's not all the seats. It's also why we have to build there. I completely agree with you, but the thing is, and part of my contention is we can't say we are the graduate and professional student assembly and represent all these graduate and professional students if we're moving out 40% of our constituents. But I definitely said I do agree that we need to, the assembly's whole needs to do a better job getting New York up to speed.
So my other feeling on this is I think that this is really something that falls on to particularly the responsibility of senior leadership, so the executive team and the division team, to be there and to be present and to help the master students through the issues and take the time to make sure that they are up to speed. I think that's why the division chief is important. That's why we place value in that position, is that you're supposed to help the newer voting members understand. If they have questions, you're supposed to answer those questions and be there with another resource. And I think that's, what if you were a division chief, if you have a master's student who doesn't know or a voting member who's unsure, taking the time to bring them up to speed. But I'm not dismissing the thing. It's a very real problem.
So, that's just one thing. I've been around for a long time. I understand the history of a lot of stuff, and I do agree with Jared and Fallon.
Okay. Second? Is there a second? Okay. Is there a second? Okay, meeting has been extended by 3 minutes. Next, can I just also wanted to say, arguably, every time we introduce a new voting member joins our assembly, whether they're a one-year master's student or they belong to sort of a longer-term degree program, we face that same issue. So it wouldn't be unique to introducing more master's students onto the assembly, right? If you're a first-year PhD student or a first-year professional student from any school, you also don't have that history, and that's sort of just something you develop through your interactions with the assembly.
And the other thing I was going to say is, as Matt mentioned, a lot of the master students who work, for instance, for the MS rep, if they are interested, they've probably been involved when they're an undergrad here. And in that sense, we do have a lot of background in terms of what's going on. We're pretty aware. But in addition to that, there are a lot of issues that master students face, especially people in one-year programs, that doesn't often have the opportunity to be voiced. That is why the representation is actually important.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we have to move on I have 3 more speakers. So I have Zena.
I have 3 more speakers.
Okay, I have Cassandra.
Yeah, I have a quick question. Could we maybe bring our presence known more into the orientation at the beginning of the year? Actually have GPSA reps there to explain more people about what goes on?
So GPSA, in regards to the general graduate school one, yeah. The GPSA, the president gets to give a talk, and then normally the exec, which is normally done by communications, Ariana did, because she did a great job, actually goes to the orientations and tries to have a booth and tries to speak to people. I know Alex and Nate also sat on his panel.
for students, so we definitely do go to orientation events.
But I don't remember learning about GPSA at my orientation, so that's why.
Oh, you did go to the orientation?
We don't go to orientation.
Well,
so if you're IRON,
yeah, so what
people are IRON,
that's why I'm
confused.
But yes, I agree.
That
was
in Richard.
Motion to accept the invite.
Sure.
Okay. Okay. The dispense. Okay. Meeting is extended by 10 minutes. Okay.
That was great.
Okay. So I have decreased. Oh, that was French. Okay. Okay. So I've exhausted the speaker's list for now.
I would just also like to point out that the language is sort of included already in the resolution, but the numbers for the veterinary school don't reflect upcoming changes because we've just had this incredible construction project. The aim of that was to introduce 20 new DVM spots for each incoming class. So the number of students at the vet school will increase by 80, which will in turn change that number probably to 3 because we're doing proportional representation. So that's just an upcoming FYI.
Okay,
Jesse. Did you say your student was exhausted?
Yes.
Then I call a question.
Okay. Is there any dissent or calling for question on the whole resolution? Okay, seeing none, let's vote on this. Those in favor of this resolution, please raise your flag. Voting members. Abstaining. So with a vote of 15-0-3, the resolution passes.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
And it is time to adjourn now. Seeing none, the meeting is adjourned.
This has been a production of Cornell University, on the web at cornell.edu.